Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there, and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. I said that too loud. I'm in a hotel room. I need to quiet down. My name is Kellen Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zimmerman. The Suns have swept the Denver Nuggets. Hello, Kevin.
If I yell really loud, are you going to... Is your speaker on too loud? Am I going to disturb some sleep?
Headphones, you're good. But yeah, that was a little bit too loud. I told myself last time, I had it last time, but now I'm just too delirious, I guess, to remember. How you doing, bud?
Good. I hope you're well. We're going to get some rest like we need it, but the Suns probably need it a little bit more than us.
Yeah. Still looking forward to ours for sure. But yeah, they could use it. We'll talk about that. So the Suns swept the Nuggets tonight, Sunday night in Denver. That is where I am. Kevin is back in Arizona. They won 125-118. This was the best game that Denver has played in the series, especially offensively. 33 points in the second quarter. That was the most for them of any quarter in the series. But to use the word series again, the story of it has been that the Suns have just been able to counter, if not match, if not outdo anything that the Nuggets have tried to accomplish in this series. And they scored 35 points in that second quarter. I thought that was very telling of the way this game went. Chris Paul was looking for a shot more than I think I've ever seen him look for a shot when, like, the team is fully healthy this season, when Book hasn't been out or anything like that, or anyone's been missing. He had 37 in this one. It was his first career 30-point game in the playoffs as a member of the Suns. He only had two of them in the regular season. I believe it is his second or third highest playoff scoring game ever. He was absolutely magnificent. I wrote it as one of the best playoff performances in franchise history. I can't see how anyone can disagree. 14 of 19 from the field, 9 of 9 from the free throw line, 7 assists, 2 turnovers, 2 steals, 3 rebounds. That was my main takeaway from the game, Kevin. He was just flat out awesome and dominated the game. What were your takeaways from it?
Elbows. Lots of elbows. And I'm looking at his shot chart right now. Counting with my head, 6 shots. How many take total? 19. Basically, that means 13 of his 19 shots were like from the right elbow, kind of to the right baseline. So that's just crazy. That it was funny. I think on the TV interview, he slipped into, they were giving me all these elbow looks and just the mid range and they were dropping. And then he like got himself out of it and was just like, oh, well, you know, this is great to be going to the Western Conference Finals, and was talking big picture. But he like caught himself just being like, yeah, I don't know why they gave me like my favorite shot ever 13 times, I guess. So that was how he did most of his damage. Book scores 34, and, you know, Jokic is ejected. Those are pretty much the main storylines. I mean, there were a lot of little things like Mikal Bridges had. I feel like he's had a lot of fourth quarters where it's just like, okay, things are getting a little rocky for the Suns. And maybe he has scored 8 to 10 points and you just don't really notice his offensive impact. And then suddenly he has two huge shots late in the game and that kind of swings things. And he had a couple in that one too that I think might be overlooked, but just a good performance for them just because Denver did look a little bit more desperate even when Jokic went out. So I think that kind of sums up what we've seen from them is, you know, even when you know that you're going to get the opponent's best shot and they're clawing to stay alive, that the Suns will be steady and play like they normally do. And even if it gets a little tough, they usually come through, and it helps to have two guards who can do what Devin Booker and Chris Paul did.
Yeah, that's what I sensed. I feel like Devin and Chris just had a feel for how the Denver was going to come out, and they knew that they had to be aggressive in certain ways. I think Book took let me see. He took 25 shots tonight. I don't know if that's a playoff high for him. It's probably not, but it's close to it. And we've been seeing him not really get too crazy in the mid to high 20s or the low 30s this year. But Chris taking 19 too, I'd have to look that up as well. But that's got to be like a playoff high for him for sure, and like one of his highest numbers of the season. I think that they sensed what they had to do tonight and that Denver was going to bring it. And I guess the moment we can talk about right now is Jokic getting tossed, because I can offer a unique perspective on it. In Denver, the play happens. Everyone's booing, and then they chant MVP in support of Jokic. It was not a play to me that I saw right away, and I think like there were a lot of people in the arena that could have had that happen for them, so they're just supporting Jokic and the scuffle with Booker. They want to support their guy chanting MVP. Sure, that's fine. What happened was someone in the Denver arena crew decided that it would be a good idea to show one replay super slowed down from a specific angle that made it look like he didn't hit campaign and the campaign was just flopping. That was a horrible idea because it led to the crowd booing like crazy and then chanting in favor of Jokic even more. And then they loudly booed campaign as he came off the floor after he was down for a good 2 to 3 minutes and was clearly struggling. Like, you know how long guys stay on the floor if they flop or whatever. But I mean, obviously not great from Denver's perspective and their fans, but it just speaks to a problem I've had for a while with the NBA as a whole, where flopping just creates that type of situation that can happen where everyone assumes there's a flop here and there. And then when it's a flop, everyone, and it's like, no, Cam legitimately took a little bit of contact in the face. And I mean, if you've ever been smacked in the face before or had someone swatted a ball like that and gotten hit in the face, you'll stay down for a bit. And that's what he did. This is a series full of flopping on both sides. This is the team with Chris Paul on it, after all, Kevin. Jay Crowder's been known to dabble in there as well. Of course, Campazzo, Jokic on Denver. They've got guys who do that too. But Jokic gets tossed. I didn't disagree with it because, as you tweeted, the pool report showed, and what the ref said, like, look, by definition, this is the rule. And the way that he swatted at the ball was like needlessly aggressive and was obviously a point of frustration. Like, he was taking out his frustration on that foul. Look, if that was like a Euro foul type situation, Kevin, where he's trying to stop a fast break or whatever, but he was clearly just smacking the ball because he was pissed. And then he hit him in the face and like, hey, don't hit him in the face if you're going to take out your frustration like that. It's the same kind of thing we talk about when guys are in the air and like, whenever Book gets pissed because he turns it over and then he fouls a guy in transition, like, you can't like shove him in that moment. You can't choose to do that. Like, you can foul him, but you can't foul him to an aggressive extent or else you'll risk getting tossed. And I saw debates back and forth. I thought it was justified. I don't know about you, but that's where I was on it.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective about the in-arena highlight, because it definitely came across on TV that Denver fans were booing the call after they saw a replay, and we didn't see what replay that was. But
you guys, saw, from what I could tell, you guys saw clear replays that Cam got hit in the face, right? Yeah, that's what I interpreted it as.
It's like bicep. So from that perspective, it makes sense why they booed, and we can take away their dumb basketball fans' takes or whatever. Because if you're showed a bad angle, sometimes that happens. As far as the foul goes, I think I understand it is by the rule book. Like, I tweeted, like, Reggie Miller was like, maybe this will get him going. And it's like, dude, like, my first thought was that's by the rule of flagrant too. I didn't think he was going to get it, 'cause I thought they would give him a little leeway just because huge, huge moment for them, MVP. And we know how this is, right? Like, they tend to like give a guy a benefit of the doubt. And it also was clearly like he didn't mean to hit him in the face, right? It wasn't malicious intent. But it was a windup. It was a hit to the face, and it was, regardless of the fact going for the ball, it was a flagrant too, in the rule book. They went by the book on that one, and that sucks for the Nuggets. But I think when you're like 94 feet from the other hoop and you had just had a bad play on your guys' end and it is a frustration foul, then that's going to kind of play in their heads about it. So I don't know. We could debate that, but I think it was borderline at least.
Denver was done at that point. There's just no way for them to win that game if Chris Paul and Devin Booker have all their limbs. Like, it would take like just like a really catastrophic meltdown from those two guys for the Suns to not win that game at that point. They went up 16, but as you'd expect from this Denver team, coached by Michael Malone with the type of guys that they have on their team, like Will Barton, they roared back. Barton scored 21 in the second half. As someone who's always been a fan of Barton's game, I was happy for him that he played really well in this playoffs, because if you'll remember, he wasn't really that good last year for Denver, and he's been struggling with injuries a lot the past couple of years. So that was good to see as someone who's a fan of his. But Denver comes back. They get it down to, I believe, a 5-point Suns lead with 5 minutes left. And there's a stretch where on 7 straight possessions, counting Suns have one possession, Denver has 2 possessions. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, counting like that. 7 straight missed shots by the two teams combined, and then 1 turnover as well. So the game's like rhythm and like flow, it was just turning into this ugly slog of no one can do anything. And Monty could have viewed that as, okay, no, they're not making up ground, I don't have to take a timeout because like there's no 3-0, 5-0 run or anything like that, we're fine. But he sensed the game was getting into that weird zone, and he called a timeout. Out of the timeout, he ran a beautiful ATO with Booker setting a back screen for Paul that basically made Michael Porter Jr. make the right read. And Kevin, yeah. I don't think you're going to believe this, but he was a step slow on doing it. He actually wasn't too far out of the way. It was a really good designed play. But I mean, man, so Chris gets that. Mikal, 17 seconds later, steal, Chris Paul layup again, and then the game's over. Those two things I wanted to mention because I thought that like the flow of the game and the way the Suns were always able to answer something that Denver was doing was how this whole series went. And that I also thought from like a stylistic schematic way, like the Suns attacking Porter was like the number one thing about this series. And for it to be like the most defining, the biggest play of the series clinching game being something targeting Porter, I thought was kind of not poetic. That's too like too big time of me to like make it sound like it's that big of a deal. It was fitting.
Yeah, man. I think the like he put up 20 points today. And I don't know, honestly, I don't know if they attacked him that much as the last 2-3 games, I guess. But I mean, they actually got role player support today, and it's kind of, if you go back, if you want to play, like, just look at what Michael Malone could have done. It's like, should he have put Monte Morris in the starting lineup? Will Barton, obviously, I don't know if you saw that, but I think he had a 5-minute answer just about, he was just pleading with the coaching staff to lift his minutes restrictions. And obviously he played great. And that's why Nuggets fans have a right to be upset, or at least very wishing that Jamal Murray was around, because that team should look more like what they look like tonight. And it just wasn't there through the rest of the series. So yeah, I mean, that's what happens in the playoffs. If we look back to the two series the Suns have been in, it's opportunity. Even if Anthony Davis gets hurt, if the Lakers take game one when Chris Paul doesn't have an arm, that suddenly is a lot more difficult. You play more games at the very least on the Suns end. And look, Book went into tonight with, I think he was 3rd or 4th in minutes played, even though this series had only gone 3 games already. And other teams I think have been into 4, right? So they need a rest, and that's just how the playoffs go, is you've got to grab opportunity by the horns. You can't let something slip. One game can really kind of snowball on you if you are playing a team like the Suns and their point guard can't dribble and you just don't feel like attacking him. Or if, I don't know, you attack Michael Porter Jr. and then you just go away from that the next game, because the Suns are really consistent at just keeping with what works. And I think that's the sign of that number 2 seed is not a joke. It's for real.
It is indeed, buddy. So after game 3, like the conversation around here and talking to people today and yesterday was like, who would the Suns rather have in the West Conference Finals? So I guess we should give our takes on that before we go. Clippers or Jazz? The Clippers are up 2-1 right now, or the Utah Jazz are. I'm sorry, I said that wrong, right? It's Utah's up 2-1. Series is probably going to go at least 6 or 7, I would guess. I don't think Utah's going to rattle off 3 straight here or 2 straight. I think it's going to go at least 6 or 7. We've seen pretty great games between the Suns and both of these teams. Who do you think the Suns match up with the best, Kevin, of the two?
This was tough. I was asked this. I went on, is it Sacramento radio show or something? I don't know. It's been a long time. Sure. Sure. I said Jazz, though, and I will stick with that. I think just when you have Rudy, Ayton matchup, I'm taking this kind of, it sounds too literal, like who matches up well, but Ayton, Gobert, Stick McKellen, Donovan Mitchell, I think that's good for the Suns, that they can kind of play a similar style to them and try to just win one-on-one matchups. Not that the game is one-on-one, but you have the guys to match up with their best players. As far as the Clippers, I just think that would just, that leaves me a little more concerned because they played that five-out style. Ayton would be defending wings a lot of the time. That's obviously going to go in his favor in lots of cases too, but I just think that they fit against the Jazz better and it'll be less wonky as far as finding holes against them. And it just is a lot more clean cut from the Suns end to just do what they do. So I'll go with the Jazz just for that reason.
Yeah. To your point on stylistic matchups, Kevin, and just like the five out, if you haven't been following the Clippers games too much, Ibaka's out for the rest of the year. I believe they've played Boogie Cousins 2 games. He's averaging 7.6 minutes per game in those games. And then Zubac has been coming off the bench recently. He's averaging 14.5 minutes per game in their 10 playoff games. They've been going more and more to five out, not playing a traditional center. I think that the way that I've put it kind of simply is that if the Clippers are playing at their best and the Jazz are playing at their best, I think that the Suns would have way more trouble with the Clippers. Now, the team that has consistently been at their best more has been the Jazz. But with that being said, I think the Suns can handle the best from the Jazz, where I'm not so sure on the Clippers. Kawhi turns into the Terminator. Paul George has quietly been playing pretty well in this playoff series. I know playoff P and memes lead you to believe otherwise, but he's been pretty solid. And that's just one heck of a team when they're fully flowing. I think if you look at everything that hasn't worked for defenses against the Suns, scheme-wise and all that kind of stuff, the Clippers can throw in a lot of switching. That's not something that many teams have been doing against them. Denver and Los Angeles did it in spurts, but in certain situations, but the Clippers can just switch everything at times, and that can lead to some difficulty. And then matchup-wise, you just look at the matchups up and down the board for Utah, which you talked about with Gobert. You look at the wings. I think Bogdanovich is really the only guy from a Suns perspective that I'm not really sure they have a guy for. I had mentioned it in when they played against Utah in that crazy game in April that felt like a playoff game. Bogdanovich is just like a little too strong for McKellen. He's a little bit too quick for Crowder, and he's just a really good scorer. But he's not like he's their third, fourth best player, so you're not super worried about him. Obviously, the backcourt matchup is what it is, but if you look at like Kawhi and PG, yes, the Suns have the wings to throw at them, but that's just like such an easy matchup win for the Clippers. And you can look at it the different ways for the backcourt too, but I mean, man, it's tough. It really is for the Clippers. So I would say the Jazz as well. Who do you think we see though? What's your prediction for who wins that series?
I'm feeling the Jazz. They're playing, it's kind of like the Suns where it's just, they're playing their style. They're doing their thing. The regular season wasn't a fluke. I guess my only reservations are about Conley. If he's going to be out for longer, that's going to really tighten that series up. But they were rolling until this past game, obviously.
Yeah, the way that I put it when the bracket broke was that if we wind up getting Clippers Jazz in the next round, which we did, whoever comes out of that other side and gets that team in the Western Conference Finals is going to be at a pretty big advantage, in my opinion, just because I thought that series was going to be an absolute slugfest. It hasn't necessarily been that through three games, but it's been three really competitive games until the Jazz just got blown out in the third game. So we'll see how they respond. But I thought it was going to be a long, grindy series. And I think the Jazz just bring that on any team they play in general. And I got to say, from a basketball perspective, I just think the Jazz produce like some of the best out of the Suns anyway. And I think the two teams just mesh really well together as opposition.
Yeah.
And I think it would just be a funner series to watch anyway. That's where I'm at with it, at least.
Yeah. Clippers are going to junk it up, throw Morris brother at them. But I think that would be like a basketball enthusiast dream if it was Utah and Phoenix, because just how clean both of those teams, the continuity, all that stuff.
Yeah, the league would rather see Kawhi Leonard versus LeBron James for sure in the Western Conference Finals, but I think that there's a really great opportunity for them to capitalize on Mitchell and Booker too, and just be like, here are two of the next stars in the league that are stars right now, and you should get used to seeing these guys a lot more. At least I think that's my opinion on it, because Mitchell's just like unbelievable in the playoffs, and we've seen Book so far pretty much be the same. That matchup would be unreal, and I'm looking forward to it, even if we don't know what's going to happen yet. But I agree. I think Utah's going to do it. All right, Kevin, we will be back at some point next week. I don't really know when. Our timeline is rather unclear right now, which is great, Kevin, because what was a little bit worse before was knowing our timeline, which was every other day for quite a while. So I hope you guys have been enjoying all of these podcasts after the games. Like, I guess we'll continue this, Kevin. I mean, if we were doing it for these rounds, shoot, we might as well do it for the bigger ones, right?
I guess so. It would be a good business decision for us.
We will keep making good business decisions, like all of you, hopefully. If you see a LeBron James-esque figure sprinting at you in transition, do not jump. Just let him jump and make that business decision with us. We'll be back next week. See you guys.